class today, for these next few minutes, is intended to challenge some of the common theories of romance that we have in America. Now, pretty much all of us were raised in a period of American history where all the romantic songs in the 80s and 90s had something to do with romanticizing brokenness. Know what I mean by that? It's like, everything I do it for you, or, you know, just, you know, all kinds of, you know, I can't picture life without you, and all this kind of stuff, which sounds so cool in a song, and it makes us all, you know, like, you know, have a great hug and kiss and that sort of thing with our significant other, and it becomes our song, and it's this mushy-gushy type thing, and it sounds good, and it kind of sort of feels good and that sort of thing, but all of a sudden we start basing romance and relationships and stuff like that off of that type of stuff, that type of thinking, and then all of a sudden we find in America where we think we're being so incredibly romantic, we find a, you know, divorce rate that is very, very, very sky high. And, you know, so obviously the answer isn't that we're doing it wrong. The answer is, oh, well, I found the wrong person, so I've got to divorce and find another person who I can be broken and him or her fix me, right? And that's kind of what we've done in America, and that's what we're going to try to build a case to counteract that today, okay? Let me tell you where I come from on this. I read an article. Let me tell you about these things. If you are looking in your book for notes, that is about as relevant as an Atari system right now. The book, I have completely changed the class. One of the things that we are doing as we go along, we started out at the church that I serve in Tallahassee, and this was supposed to be our second thing. These are kind of soft openings at our congregation so that we can really iron out all the details that we need to iron out and that sort of thing. So I typed up a lesson and then changed it completely. So what this is a set of notes, but let me explain the set of notes. These were, I spoke at the Faulkner Lectureships back in March on this topic, and this was my lesson for my eyes only, and so you're going to find some things in there like page 3, paragraph above the big bold congruence within self. I do know the difference between the words through and through. But it being my own personal set of notes, I did not go back and correct that. And the way you got these in your hands the last time we were delivering our Family Forward material, I emailed the youth minister and I said, hey, would there be any way you could print this? I don't have a printer here at the hotel room. And so he printed about 100 of these and everybody started grabbing them. So I was like, don't question my intelligence because I just typed this up quickly to have class notes for the lecture. So anyway, you have the notes. They just are not well done because I was just going to speak from them and have them as a reference. So please don't question my sanity. Anywho, so you got that. I read this article that talked about how we have reason for optimism in America about marriages. And I believe that we do because we're trending better. But I want you to listen to the numbers because the numbers are very interesting. At one point, they were saying that 3 out of every 4 marriages in America were ending in divorce. That is astronomically high. Okay, that is definitely a sign that we've gotten something not right. Well, then they kind of went back and looked, and they said it was about 66%. So 2 out of every 3 you know, we're ending in divorce and that sort of thing. And, you know, so good job, thumbs up. It seems to be getting better. And this article points to the fact that the divorce rate among first-time marriages is at 50%. So, I mean, great. You know, in America, we went from 3 out of every 4 to 2 out of every 3 to 1 out of every 2. And, you know, percentages are getting better and better and better. But think about the situation that we cause for ourselves. We're celebrating that, you know, only 5 out of every 10 are dissolving. Okay? And so we created a situation for ourselves in our society where marriage is definitely under attack. At this time when I wrote these notes, Alabama had been going through some issues where the marriage laws were under attack. But since then, our Supreme Court has done it to us where marriage is definitely being redefined based on our government. Marriage is under attack for a lot of reasons. Okay, David, I'm going to talk to us ministers for a second, because I think inadvertently, sometimes in our churches, we, through trying to do good things, almost hurt. Stephen, forgot you were in here. Sorry about that, bro. So us ministers, we need to heavily consider this, okay? One of the things that I'm talking about is this. Sometimes we present materials, okay? Sometimes we present materials that are kind of based out of, like, needs, okay? And so I won't call anybody out, but I'll just say that. Based out of needs. And that seems well and good and that sort of thing. And by the way, I should say this. I have a lot of respect for authors, presenters, you know, researchers, all that kind of stuff. And I have an appreciation for their work. And so I'm not saying I'm the authority or anything like that. I'm just saying we've probably come to a point where we need to rethink some things. And this is what I'm trying to do today. Okay? So let's say we're considering a curriculum that's talking about the needs of men and women and about how we need to meet those needs if we're going to have a good marriage. Okay? So let's take the needs-based approach. If we go through this curriculum and we say, you know, according to one such study, that men need sex, okay? Well, according to that model, if we have sex every night, then we have a good marriage. Okay. Well, I've seen a number of couples that have a lot of sex that are in counseling. Because why in the world are we not happy if I'm trying to meet his needs? Okay? Let me say it this way. Just because we know needs doesn't create an identity. Okay? Knowledge does not create an identity. I like to watch certain... I like to watch survival shows. I like to watch, like, military shows and stuff like that, okay? There's one show that I like to watch called Surviving the Cut. I don't know if any of you have ever seen that, but I like it. I like actually watching the psychological side of things. I like watching the guys as they're going through and getting tired and all that kind of stuff. And how they handle the cognitive process of what they do. Let's take Navy SEALs, because that's what it's about. It's about American special ops, what they do to become special ops and that sort of thing. And so let's take the Navy SEALs. They're fascinating guys. Let's say the Navy SEALs are able to swim 10 miles. That is impressive, okay? I used to be able to swim really, really well, but not so much anymore. But anyway, 10 miles is impressive, okay? Let's say they can swim, you know, 10 miles. I don't know if that's an actual thing, but let's just say they can. You know, I saw one thing where they had their rebreathers on, they swam in, I think at least 5 miles through a channel, came up completely undetected. Okay, so they swam at least 5 miles. let's say they hop up out of the water amphibiously and they get to running. They've got their weaponry on their back and that sort of thing. They get to running. They can run 10 miles from there. So they've just swam 5 to 10 miles. They hop up on the beach. They run 10 miles to the point where they're going to engage battle. Okay? And then after 10 miles of swimming, 10 miles of running, they're able to take off their weapon, put it together, load a shell, and from 100 yards away, land a perfect shot on a guy, engage the enemy, win, and get to the extraction point and go. Okay? So let's take that knowledge and let's say, you know what, I know what Navy SEALs do. Does that make me a Navy SEAL? No. Okay? That was easy. But let's say, okay, I've got a lot of weight to lose if I'm going to become a Navy SEAL. What if I start swimming every day and I get to the point where I can swim 10 miles and only just be moderately fatigued? And then I add to my regimen where I swim 10 miles and I start jogging and jogging and jogging and jogging and jogging and jogging to the point where I can swim 10 miles, go run 10 miles and that sort of thing. And I've got a 300 mag with a humongous scope on it that can see a bird think from 200 yards away. And so, you know, let's say I start swimming with that on my back, jogging with that on my back, and then I add to my training, I put a hay bale at one end of the field and set up a target at the other end of the field with a quarter on there, and I'm able to pop down on the hay bale, prop up against it, and shoot that quarter from 100 yards away after running 10 miles, after swimming 10 miles. And I'm able to accomplish what a Navy SEAL does. Does that make me a Navy SEAL? Why? I'm able to do what a Navy SEAL does, right? Why am I not at that point a Navy SEAL?
I don't guess you've enlisted.
Okay. You're not enlisted. A Navy SEAL has gone through a process where they have become something, not just done something. They have changed who they are and have become what they want to be. They are not simply doing actions to get a title.
You mentioned the psychological. Their whole psyche has changed. They've
right.
been mentally developed, not just physically.
Right.
Trained.
All right. So with that said, that's basically what we're doing today is what we want to talk about for these next few minutes. If we teach curriculum where we only ask people to do and not do certain things, then we are asking them to have a form of the marriage that they should have without asking them to become the spouse that they should be to have the marriage that they want. Does that make sense? Okay. So we're going to go from there. And I want to explain something to you. Okay? We've got the word congruent here. And you may be thinking I'm going to twist the meaning of the word congruent. If you're like Michael who thinks in these ways and that sort of thing, and you know what congruency means, then whatever you learned in geometry in ninth grade, eighth grade, whatever the case may be, that is exactly what we're talking about. Congruency, can anybody basically tell me what congruency is? Like in a geometric sense. What are two congruent triangles? Same angles, same length sides, that sort of thing. But there are two that are the same. Correct? All right. So let's take that American model of romance, and let's challenge it a little bit. The American model of romance is going to be displayed to you over here. When we seek fulfillment in marriage, okay, when we seek to be made whole by romance, now we know the biblical word help meet, okay? That's not what this is, okay? When we seek fulfillment, I'm broken, I need you, that sort of thing, we're looking at this. By the way, talking about songs and movies and all that kind of stuff, there's Do you remember the movie Jerry Maguire? There's two famous lines in that movie. Show me the money and you complete me. Okay? That's what that looks like. Now let's talk about why that's an issue. If you were to take this slice right here and remove it, what does this look like? Other than Pac-Man. Somebody was going to say it. It looks like a circle that's hurting, right? It looks like something that really wants to be a circle, but it's not. Okay? And so its only job in its existence is to find a slice of pie that will fit and make it whole. That is its only job. Find a slice that fits to make it whole. So what does that make this piece right here? What then is the purpose of this piece? To complete this circle's emptiness, right? How would that make you feel as a spouse? Your role becomes completing somebody else. If they ever grow up, heal, whatever, where then is your identity drawn? What I propose is that we need to look more like this. That is one triangle. But it is actually made up of two congruent triangles, where if you pull this one aside, you pull this one aside, they are two triangles that stand on their own, but when they come together, they make one. They're congruent. They stand together, but when they come together, they're able to make one. They have angles. They have everything a triangle is supposed to have, and they still come together to make a triangle. Okay? So it's not like they're two broken shapes or two partial shapes or anything like that that needs another partial shape. They come together to make one. It's a very interesting thing that happens when we have congruency in triangles, and it's a very interesting thing that happens when we have congruency in marriage as well. So, let's see. What time is she? Who's got a schedule? When are we supposed to end? 2:10?
Yes.
Okay. We have, well, if you were in my dad's class just a minute ago, mine and my dad's class, he talked about, you know, staying on the straight line or kind of having a way to move around as you develop. Basically, marriage can be seen as a road, a path, with ditches on each side. Okay? On one side, you've got coldness, where the couple, where the relationship just never really develops any warmth towards each other, where they just don't click, where they don't jive, where there's not a lot of forgiveness, there's not a lot of coupleship going on there, and so there's just, you know, the marriage is bound to die because of the coldness that exists therein. On the other ditch over here is what we actually have a lot of in America right now, and that is the epidemic of codependence. Codependence is equally as sickening as coldness, but it feels more romantic, so we trend towards codependency. Okay? And that's what the fulfillment seeking pie thing is. Okay? So what we need to do today, we need to focus on not being either of those extremes. But we as human beings tend to act in extremes. But we need to begin to practice self-moderating. Okay? That's why one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-discipline. It's what God gives us. Okay? So let's talk about two different types of congruency. The first type of congruency is congruency within yourself. Galatians chapter 6, verses 3 through 5 says this: if anyone thinks that they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions, then they can take pride in themselves alone, without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. We may say things like this verse. We may call it terms like self-actualized, self-aware, or a more common thing to say is, he's a man of his word. This is so important to God to be self-congruent that God stipulated leaders of the church that we call elders, one of the things that he says that they must be is not double-tongued. Basically, what they say over here is what they're going to say over here, and they're going to act consistently, no matter if you see them say this or don't see them say this, they're going to live out what they're saying. Okay? So basically, they have congruency in what they're saying, and congruency in what they're doing, and saying and doing appears to be one. Self-congruency is a concept that comes straight out of God's Word, and it is vital to us as Christians, okay? 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "But in your heart, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect." We have to be willing to talk truthfully about that which is in our hearts. Philippians 2:12 says, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now not only in his presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." Why fear and trembling? Because our becoming new in God is a monumental thing that should be handled with a sober thought, as sober of a thought as a person can have. So congruency within self is important because God has asked us to be this way. I can't say it any more simple than that. A lot of times whenever anybody talks anything psychological, the hairs kind of stand up on our neck in the church and we're just like, oh, we're about to get something new age. Well, God said it. Okay, this isn't new age or anything like that. Being congruent, meaning being who you are here and who you are here, is precisely what God has asked us to be. The second reason why being self-congruent is important is because unfulfilled individuals lead to unfulfilled relationships. Okay? I'll try not to look at those fractions. If you already have, then you're being studious, and I appreciate that. But there's a difference between adding fractions and multiplying fractions. We think that adding fractions is the way marriage works out. Sometimes we do. If you add half to a half, you get what? One. You get a whole. But if you multiply a half by a half, you get what? A quarter. So if you get two broken people with the expectations that if I simply find somebody who will marry me and life will be fine, coming together, they will only enjoy a quarter of the marriage that they should be able to enjoy. If we are looking for fulfillment from other people, we will not ever become whole within ourselves and our faith to God. Because we are looking to something that is created, not the Creator, to make us whole. Marriage is like multiplying fractions. Okay? So let's talk about relational congruence. I was joking with Mr. Sargent this morning about how, sometimes we preach certain lessons because we need to hear it, and we just assume that the crowd needs to hear it too. So we make a lesson for ourselves and hope that somebody else gets something out of it as well. This is an area that as I studied it, I was like, all right, I need to study this more and more and more and more. And as I say these things, if you hear Jennifer's gentle voice over there say, amen, then you'll know that she agrees with me. Okay? One of the things, we'll kind of couple these together for time's sake. Two things that we need to be congruent in when we are looking for somebody is values and faith. Values and faith. I'm trying to think of the most expedient way to explain this. The Bible clearly talks about the concept of not being unequally yoked. What that simply means is this. if we are attracted to somebody, if we feel good with somebody, if somebody makes us laugh, but if we cannot share our values with them when it comes to spirituality, which should be number one in our lives, then we have invited into the relationship an automatic mechanism to create friction. Okay? And so when what they value and what we value are indistinguishable, because when we combine, we can become one, that's a beautiful thing. Okay? Jennifer, I used you in the last class as an illustration, but when she and I were first meeting and that sort of thing, we met on a mission trip in Guyana. And I, you know, I remember her holding a baby with AIDS and just loving on him the entire time. And I remember her studying with people, and you know, I'm sitting there watching her like, well, she's really, really beautiful, so we've got that going. But, oh man, you know, the values that she's displaying on this trip are, you can tell that it's not new to her, like she's living out what she believes. And so, like, I knew, okay, check on the physical side, you know, she's beautiful. But on the value side, we're there. There's going to be some good things. Okay? We should all work on that. And then finally, this is the part that really hits home for me. Communication, or congruent communication, is something that we need to strive for. Let me sum it up like this. Let me give you two incongruent messages, okay? Let me give you two incongruent messages. All right. Let me say this, Glenn. Glenn, I like you. Good grief.
That was bad children.
Oh, well, you need to have surgery to get over it. But anyway, I like you, but I said it as though I'm mad at you. What's my message to you? Is either of those clear?
Confusion.
Okay. It's just a confusing message because my nonverbals have anger all over them, but my verbals have delight. You know, okay? Or what we likely more often experience maybe within our marriages or within our churches is what's called passive aggression, where we smile and pretend like we like somebody and we give them the sugar-coated backhanded slap. Okay? That is an incongruent message. I want you to think that I like you while I sit here and put you down. Congruent communication happens when verbal messages and nonverbal messages match. It entails the ability and freedom to use words that accurately reflect and match each individual's feelings. Incongruent communication is indirect, unclear, vague, dishonest, distorted, incomplete, and not nurturing. Congruent communication is clear, complete, and congruent families or healthy families, functional families, have clear roles and rules that govern the family process. Okay? So today, my point that I would like for all of us to get is this. We need to end the type of romanticizing brokenness. Brokenness belongs to God and God alone to fix. It's fine to be a broken human being, because life does that. This world is broken. If it were not broken, it would be called heaven. Okay? People in this world are broken, and therefore we break each other. It is not a sin to be broken, but it is God and God alone that heals humans in our hearts and our souls. It is not other humans that heals our hearts and our souls. And so we need to begin the process of eliminating from the narrative of romance that we need things from other people, we want healing from other people and that sort of thing, and we need to begin helping people understand that if you're looking for healing, look up, not out. When we are able to look up and allow God to heal that is inside of us that is broken, then we can give to other people the whole person that God has healed. I struggled with this concept when I was a teenager because there are verses like, through humility of mind, consider others more important than yourself and that sort of thing. But I remember one very important thing. One summer, we had a summer series when I was a teenager here. I think I just graduated. But we had a summer series here where men came and taught our Wednesday night class based on the profession that they had. And one man was a firefighter, and I remember him talking about the number one rule of firefighter, of being a firefighter, is take care of yourself first. Well, I took exception to that, and he knew that somebody would, so he was prepared with an answer. I said, I don't see how that works in this class because this is a Bible class and it goes against what God says. He said, that's perfectly fine for you to have that opinion, but if I don't take care of myself and I'm out of shape and I rush into a house to get you and I faint because I'm running for the first time in 5 years and I die, then you're going to die. Number one rule for me to be able to help you is for me to be healthy. Interesting stuff. Jesus was asked one time about the greatest laws. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is?
Name of your neighbor.
As?
Yourself.
What if we truly did love our neighbors as we love ourselves? They'd probably hate us sometimes, wouldn't they? Implied in that commandment is that we actually do like who we've become, because we realize that we are blessed by God. Okay? When we give ourselves fully to God for Him to heal, then we can give ourselves to our child, we can give ourselves to our family, we can give ourselves to our kids, we can give ourselves to their t-ball teams, we can give ourselves to all that kind of stuff, but we get it flipped over on its head. We give until there's nothing left of us, and then we don't have anything for God to work with, or we don't voluntarily give anything to God. One more illustration, then I'll go. Greatest illustration I have of this is one summer down in Guyana, and if you've ever been down there, you know how hot it is in the summertime. We were going out way far away from our hotel, and the preacher and his wife had bottles of water for everybody, and they thought that they had been told an accurate number of how many of us were coming to help them, but they were one bottle short, and I was sitting there distributing bottles to everybody out of the ice chest and just going along, and before I knew it, I was like, oh, there's no bottle for me. That's okay. The Bible says through humility of mind, consider others more important than themselves. And so I'm going to take that the most literal way possible. Everybody else can have water, and I'll just figure out something. So like I would go up and be like, hey, can I have a sip? And just kind of do that throughout the day. I got so severely sick from that I became a cause instead of helping the cause. Our group leader nearly had to take me to the hospital because I would not take care of myself, and therefore I became a problem. You and I need to allow ourselves to be ministered to be filled by God, and to remain whole, energized, and complete so that we can give of ourselves in an effective way. May we stop, or may we never look to things on this earth to make us whole if we're feeling incomplete, and maybe look to God above. And in so doing, our marriages will be more blessed. Thanks for being in class.